Hi.
Aha.
This is, I think, my third or fourth time speaking here. I remember the first Smart Content Summit, and it's really heartening to see the explosion and the recognition of the value of metadata in our industry. And so I was a dreamer 3 or 4 years ago and had a lot of vision, and it's been a long road. And this is kind of the first time at this conference or at other conferences that we've actually been able to talk about where we are and some of the systems that we've put in place. And, you know, our main objective is really to future-proof what we can do so we're not locked into any single thing, or we don't build to an application and not a platform. And we're lucky because Mikkel is in town from Switzerland for the week, and so he's here and he can actually talk about some of the specific things that he's doing in automation and machine learning. So the first thing that I wanted to mention is really the distinction between taxonomy and metadata. And if you read the quote that I've put by Neil Gaiman on the bottom of the screen, that's really where the problem description started. A lot of the rekeying and the problems with duplicate metadata and inefficient workflows had to do with the fact that there wasn't an appreciation for taxonomy, and then when systems replaced physical processes, you didn't have subject matter experts in taxonomy helping set those systems up. You essentially had engineers building systems for their one purpose. And so we took a step back and said, we really want that taxonomy governance to be the starting point of any investment that we put into a platform here. And we don't just want to, you know, use some open source library or do something where we don't know if there's missing actors or missing names or, you know, crowdsourced data. We wanted to really sort of control what we felt was our competitive advantage in our IP, the information about our content. And so that brought us to the sort of second founding and guiding principle of the platform that we've put together, which is that in an entertainment company trying to invest in technology, there's a strong penchant towards applications, right? I want to do thing X, so let's build an application that does thing X. Then I can prove ROI for thing X, and then next year if I want to do thing Y, maybe thing X will work, maybe it won't, and maybe I can just build thing Y into thing X. And so when I started in this position, I sort of looked around and I saw, wow, there are these Frankenstein systems that were built to do one thing 16 years ago, and now they're sort of standing on toothpicks, and that's because they weren't sort of built in a future-proof way. And so the examples that I've given are sort of, you know, one of them is Walmart.com's e-commerce versus Amazon's e-commerce, right? So I look at the efforts that Walmart has put into e-commerce as really being an application. Oh, we have these physical stores. We want to sell stuff online too because that's cool. So let's set up a way to do that. Versus Amazon, which used books to build a platform, and now they can launch businesses left and right, you know, whenever they want to, doing whatever. And so if you look at the performance of Walmart.com in the last year, they've essentially had to go out and acquire e-commerce platforms because their own application has not been doing too great. Same sort of thing with MySpace and Facebook. MySpace is an application that is meant to connect people online, and Facebook wanted to own identity on the internet. And so building a platform versus building an application, who wins in that example? So our strategy is sort of summed up by this mission statement, that we're trying to compete with digital video platforms, and we're doing that by consolidating taxonomy, computer, and human tagging of video and text materials, and then publishing that via creative work-level metadata. And so what I mean by creative work-level metadata is, if you were around for the ITER discussions earlier, it would be ITER level one, right? There is an episode of this series, not there is an asset in this language, in this version of this series. And so that's kind of how we gate the scope of our platform. And then the applications that are required to distribute our content take our metadata, and then they build their applications specifically for what they're trying to do. And we found that to be incredibly valuable. So metadata and automation really has, if you look across the industry, really has one major use case that we hear over and over again. And that really has to do with the state of the art and what computers, what's feasible with computers and with machine learning and automation today. And that's really search, right? I've got an archive of content. I want to find something. And it's great for that. And actually, taxonomy and, you know, a lot of the guiding principles of what we're doing, if that's all you want to do, then a lot of these solutions are perfectly fine. If all you want to do is find something, then I think the state of the art, well, it depends on what you're trying to find, but the state of the art will help you do that pretty turnkey. What we're trying to do is build something that's agnostic to what the use case is, first of all, but second of all, that allows us to expand the scope beyond what is possible with the state of the art today by supplementing it with human tagging and human annotation. Another thing that we're trying to do in order to sort of get away from what we see as sort of future-proofing and vendor lock-in is provide very robust training data. And so I'm going to get into that. But the use cases that really underlie how we get value out of our platform are search to start. So, but not just search, I want to find this person, but you know, all of the things that we can get out of our content efficiently. So I've got a slide that shows sort of the major classes, but I've got an example. We have an application, a video search application, where you can answer this question. All the times in scandal that Olivia Pope was in an argument in the White House, right? So help me understand how, you know, state-of-the-art in computer vision can help me do that, right? It's incredibly difficult, would require a lot of time, and we're able to do that today, and it's in use by the writer's room and scandal. The second thing, the same set of metadata can help us personalize our digital platforms. So whether we're talking about recommendation engines or similar shows features, or whether we're talking about sort of inline, I think it was mentioned earlier, the Amazon X-ray experience, but on steroids, you know, what's the rich metadata somebody watching an episode on an iPad can access immediately? That's also a use case for the same set of metadata. And then finally, using data to predict performance. So right now we're doing a bunch of tagging and we're helping trying to tune algorithms to, you know, going back to an earlier presentation with Netflix, help us decide on financing decisions, really staying away from telling, you know, the creative rooms what to do, but how can we use this metadata to do that, to help us with our data science and our algorithms, right? And so really those are the business cases for metadata at Disney ABC. So here's our platform, essentially. You see, underlying everything, we have an ontology, and that's our Creative Works ontology. We're actually talking with Movie Labs about collaborating on an industry standard version of this. So, you know, stay tuned for that. But the industry ontology is a graph. It's a graph ontology, W3C standards based, and it is dynamic. It's not a table. So it allows for new formats to come on and not break our model. It also allows the model to drive a lot of the applications. We do use MarkLogic, and that's a semantic database, and the ontology fits perfectly within that. So you're welcome, Matt. So that is a core component. We sort of spent an entire year just experimenting with graph database technology before we really accelerated what we were building. So it starts out at the top with this taxonomy solution, and these are lists of terms with unique identifiers. Those feed in to our tagging platform that we've built within DatG, Map3 Media Annotation Platform, and the three refers to triples, which is the way that graph databases work and store data. Once that data is tagged, either with a computer or with a human, it goes into our metadata repository, which is the platform that all the metadata sits in, and you can build applications off of this metadata platform for a broad variety of things. And so right now, we have video search that's live within DatG. We're building library search, which is sort of templated pages of metadata about our content and series and characters. And then you can do very deep analytics. I can show you minute-by-minute jokes in Blackish, and I can overlay Nielsen ratings minute by minute over them. And if you want to know what happened during that spike and who told the joke about which person and what was the subject of the joke, we can do that because we've built the platform to do that, right? So that's sort of, again, the underlying philosophy behind what we're doing. And then I had to fill out the bottom of the slide. So here's some tech that we're using, right? APIs. Actually, we're doing a pub sub. We're using linked data standards, and we're building automation. So one of the things that I think we're going to move over to Mikkel now, one of the things that I want to highlight about what I think is the brilliance in the work that Mikkel has done is that if you take companies that exist around the industry that are selling automation services, there are a few problems that we've seen that we want to address, and we hope the wider industry addresses them as well. So number one, when I got into this, we were using a service for metadata extraction, and the search application was part of that service. The data was hosted in that service, and you didn't have the ability to use that data for other things, and that data was really custom to that service. And so we tried to get that data out of the service to use it and to cut that tie. That was really difficult to do. And so that's one problem that this avoids. And as you'll see, you can basically switch out different machine learning algorithms or state-of-the-art or different companies on top of our platform, but we hold all the data. So that's one. And then two is the training set, right? So training sets are critically important for machine learning. And because we have a manual tagging workflow, we can generate our own training sets that are 100% accurate instead of using, an open source source of data or something that might have a lot of problems. And we can also leverage that same human QA platform to correct the machine learning algorithms and feed back information to tune that training set on our own grounds and on our own property. And we really love the ability to do that. And that gets us to 100% accuracy extremely quickly, because for search, you may not need 100% accuracy. But if you're going to choose pilots and if you're going to put consumer applications out, you need 100% accuracy. As I think it was mentioned earlier today, 99.9 is not good enough when you're talking about consumer-facing applications or spending $20 million on a new series. Oh, I think this is the last slide that I've got. Here's a very broad example of how we're splitting up our annotation. And the metadata team versus the R&D team kind of represents scaled out tagging, which we're doing for ABC. The R&D really represents really deep tagging. A lot of the data science applications are the R&D ones. And the stuff in the metadata team tagging is the stuff that's ripe for machine learning, right? A lot of the stuff that would be in R&D, it is not possible today to use automation to generate that metadata. It has to be done by a human, and it has to be done with somebody that understands creative content. All right, introducing Mikkel.
All right. Well, thanks, Anthony, for introducing the platform. So basically, I will talk about the last layer on MAP3. MAP3 is our manual tagging platform, and we added a layer on top of it to add automation. Obviously, just adding this layer didn't change our philosophy. We try to be as generic as possible, not being in a vendor lock-in, so we can add new algorithms, substitute the ones that we are not happy with, or even benchmark one against the other. Another very important thing is we have persons tagging in the platform right now, and we want to take advantage of it. So the models keep improving after time. So if we start generating models with the first episode of Blackish, once we have 5-6 episodes, we expect better results. And especially cover, as it was discussed in the panel before, if there is a new character, we also want to cover it with the new models. So I will just talk a little bit about how we made those generic workflows. And The simplest workflow that we can imagine is just a black box that we took from a vendor, from the open source space, or from the research community, and we feed it with training data from our platform. And once we have a model already trained, we can just throw a new video to the algorithm and get some results back. That's the simplest thing that we could do. But then we decided to add a couple of components that allows us to switch between vendors or algorithms easier. The first one is just a repository before going to the recognition algorithm that captures every sample that we will send to this algorithm. It tracks the origin. Does it come from a QAer in the platform? Does it come from an algorithm that is making our current manual data more dense? What's the accuracy, and so on? Or even if we have too much data and the algorithm cannot support so much, which samples do we select for this specific algorithm? So that will be the Map3 dataset manager. And with this, we will feed the black boxes as we take, or from vendors or from the research community. And then we added a second component after the algorithm that we call at recognition time, that is basically a dictionary. If we, for example, take an algorithm that comes from the open source community, maybe it's trained with a taxonomy that is not the same that our existing systems use. So we need something that translates. And in our case, we connect all this with the lower layer in Map3, that is the manual tagging platform, using different bots. This allows us to have multiple algorithms competing, have a benchmark, and then decide we really want to go with this vendor or with this solution. So that was the generic workflow. And then answering to the question, what did we plug in this platform? This is what we have right now. We have multiple face recognition algorithms on it. We have a places and one object recognition algorithm. And we are working on authorities extraction actions and also improving our existing scene segmentation. Yeah, authorities extraction will be the inputs that we use in the tagging platform. For example, places, names of the characters, things like that. And also, yeah, another big advantage of being generic in Node is that as we can do benchmarking on the algorithms, we can see, oh, this algorithm really helped us a lot for this other component. For example, now we are building new scene segmentation algorithms, and we see, oh, the character recognition is very interesting for it. So we can take multimodal approaches for that. And now I just wanted to show you how this looks like. Once we have the algorithms, once the algorithms run through the data is fed back to the platform and is presented to a QAer. And basically they see this. So they see the timestamp, the tag that was associated, and then they can accept or deny it or correct it and suggest another tag. This is for places, another example with object recognition. Again, the advantage of this is that after we can take the corrections and improve our data set to have a better model and be able to reduce bottlenecks in QA in the platform. One last thing. So once we have this workflow done and running, we started thinking, where can we improve? Because a lot of people talk about recognition algorithms, and we hear a lot of big numbers like 99.99%. But there is actually a lot of room of improvement in other spaces. One is, how do we select which samples, which frames, which segments do we send from our content to these algorithms? Or once we got the answer from these recognition algorithms, how do we understand this data? How we combine it to take a final decision on the tag? And very especially in the training data. So we have seen algorithms not performing very well with bad data, but as soon as we put an effort on improving the training, the algorithm performs as the vendor said. So this is one of the places where we are spending more time. Not only adding data by QA, but also adding algorithms that check the quality of this data and send us alarms if it's not fulfilling our expectations. And that will be all from our side.
Guy, are we doing questions? Does anybody have questions?
Any questions? Raise your hand. I'll get a microphone over to you. Oh, here we go. Hold on.
When you're doing the basically the manual tagging, do you also use the actual users to do that manual tagging? So like people who are actually watching it, do you incorporate them into that process at all, or is it solely internally that you're doing that?
Everything that we're doing today is for internal applications. We're not yet leveraging outside workforces, and we have internally trained workforces doing the tagging. But it's a platform that was built around a crowdsourcing architecture, so we could turn that on with, you know, weeks of advance notice.
Don't be shy, people. Raise your hand if you got a question. We've got a, there we go.
Hi, have you used generative adversarial neural networks in your work?
And what have have we used what?
Generative adversarial neural networks for content recognition.
That was an easy one.
Matt?
Wait, maybe we need to pass that mic back and be like, what the hell are you... what are you talking about, Eve?
That'd be another 45 minutes. So you guys showed the interface internally for tagging. How are people able to get access to the data? How do they... When did they just call you up and answer those questions? Or?
Can you turn the deck back on? We actually had two slides. One of them showed the search application.
Hold on.
And it was the search that I mentioned. How many arguments has Olivia Pope and Scandal had? It shows you what that looks like.
Oh.
There we go. So it's kind of an eye chart, but
cool.
You can see Scandal, Olivia Pope, all of the White House locations, and then under actions you have arguing. And so our current iteration of the search application has a dialogue search, which is all indexed to closed caption, and then all of the tags that we've either manually or via computer generated appear on the left-hand side. You don't have to take screenshots, Matt. I can send it to you.
It's for my notes.
Any other questions before we move on? And I highly recommend, Anthony, that you speak with Eve, because you should be integrating advanced.
Well, Mikkel knows what those are. I had to verify that just to make sure. I know we're using neural nets in some form or fashion.
That's right. Thank you so much. Thanks, Anthony. Appreciate that, gents.